The presentation of anarchism, a social philosophy which aims at the emancipation, economic, social, political, and spiritual, of the human race. The emancipation.
Anarchist Essays is brought to you by Loughborough University's Anarchism Research Group. For more information on the ARG, see the link in the show notes or follow us on Twitter at ARGLBORO.
Mechanical Failures and Anarchist Freedom by Peterson Silva. Anarchists often employ metaphorical imagery when discussing liberty, but it is often hard to tell when metaphor ends and literal allusion begins. For example, David Graeber conceived of freedom as a tension between a play principle in human activity and the rule-bound games we generate when we play. Is this a metaphor, or are we literally to conceive of all human institutions, like the family, capitalism, or the state, as akin to football or poker? What about Murray Bookchin's ecology of freedom, seeing as we are indeed animals? Some turn to zeitgeist capturing technology to make a point. For Guy Debord, writing during the rise of the television in 1968-ish France, people were becoming an audience to their own lives. For Eric Lawson, the state is like a computer's operating system. Others prefer physical terms, in different levels of abstraction. Hecate wrote that to hold tightly to shame, resentment, or any emotion or any story of how the world really is to be held tightly, and this is not freedom. To hold gently is to be held gently, which is freedom. Kropotkin, as Richard Morgan writes, employed images and tropes from biopolitical science but took them literally and made them real in a radical political framework. Elisée Reclus once warned us that the proverbial formulas, often metaphorical, are dangerous, as one happily acquires the habit of repeating them like a machine, as if to avoid reflection. This message also contains a metaphor about machines. I think this is actually a very useful figure of speech to discuss what liberty means within anarchism. This is for lots of reasons. It symbolizes, as noted by Reclus, unconsciousness even amidst action. Also, anarchism took shape as the Industrial Revolution took flight, the latter demanding, as Cedric Robinson wrote, a kind of submission which invaded every recess of the worker's existence. It therefore references the anarchist criticism of humans literally made to perform inhuman rhythms. In this essay, I want to discuss anarchist freedom by digging a little deeper into a particular metaphor using the figure of the machine, the notion of failure in complex systems, an idea from the field of engineering, at least as I read it through the work of David Woods and colleagues. I am also going to be quoting Josh Belton a lot. He's an engineer with a penchant for philosophy and sociology and a marvelous YouTube channel called Thunk, which I highly recommend. When operating large-scale machinery, such as airplanes or nuclear reactors, people tend to notice and fix what looks broken, but if everything is shut down every time a light bulb needs changing, nothing is ever going to get done. Such systems are thus usually designed with enough margins for errors that allow them to keep running in spite of issues. Repairs happen when they're necessary or when there's a convenient opportunity. Complex systems, then, run in a constant slate of slight disrepair. Sometimes, however, a combination of things left unfixed leads to catastrophic failure, hurting people. When this happens, it is common to search for a single cause that explains the disaster, especially if it allows for attribution of guilt. Quote-unquote, human error is quickly found, for even if the cause was mechanical, someone may, for example, have missed evidence that something was wrong, or not have planned adequately for it from the beginning. To avoid future issues, the culprits might be exiled, punished, or simply retrained. However, Woods and colleagues explain that there is no such thing as human error. Different knowledge of events and context, or different goals, lead to different judgments of people's performances. As Pelton summarizes, human error is above all an artifact of hindsight bias, which recontextualizes something as if it obviously contributed to the disaster in a way that anyone should have seen coming. In other words, there will always be ways to explain failure through negligence or incompetence, just because in a complex system there's always something going wrong. Erroneous actions should only be the starting point for an investigation, but one that inquires the system itself. human error, Woods and colleagues write, is not some deficiency or flaw or weakness that resides inside people, being rather a result of their interaction with the system. On the other hand, there is a counterproductive way to focus on the system. One may, Woods and colleagues write, restrict the range of human activity, perhaps by policing practitioners so they more closely follow the rules, or by introducing more automation to, quote-unquote, eliminate people from the process altogether. But as Pelton notes, adding more moving parts to take humans out of the loop mixes in new variables that might fail, and therefore tends to produce even more errors, and crucially, more judgments of human error. Emphasis on increasing efficiency generates more pressure on operators, write Woods and colleagues, and additional technology creates new burdens and complexities for already beleaguered practitioners, leading to new modes of failure. How can we reliably avert disaster then? Well, failures must be seen as opportunities to learn and change. Instead of using investigations to find out how others failed, presumably to punish them, information flow must be rewarded so that better decisions can be made and issues are less likely to be overlooked. Pelton summarizes the best way to prevent critical failures in complex machines as simply empowering people to spot and fix problems as they crop up, making the system more adaptive and robust. He also notes that repair is messy, idiosyncratic, unpredictable, and unlike assembly lines, not conducive to automation or rote procedure. It is artisanal work, requiring artistry, problem-solving, expertise, as well as the time needed to experiment. Hence, empowering autonomous, decentralized repair includes training and experience, but also providing ample resources, as well as understanding what pressures we're applying to individuals that will influence how they make everyday decisions about safety. If the metaphor isn't obvious yet, I'm going to spell it out. Anarchists can be seen as making a similar case, with the complex machines in questions standing for societies or social patterns. Machines made of their own operators who run themselves to perform the task of living their own lives. Interaction in a sufficiently large group always involves conflict. That is, we too collectively live in constant slight disrepair. Yet, people do not usually suspend every commitment they have as a result of a quarrel until their relationships are perfectly harmonious. Everything goes on until rituals, from phone calls and meetings to interventions and assemblies, provide convenient opportunities for fixes, that is, for restoring people's willingness to cooperate with one another. Still, a lot can be missed because of all the complexity involved. Problems might compound and combine until they cause harm on a greater scale. Anarchists were not the first to point out that such harm is not a matter of human error. A lot of post-Republican Roman thinkers, for example, basically said as much when they concluded that the Republic ruined not because people lacked virtue, but because of constitutional shortcomings. However, for anarchists, the solution cannot be bureaucratic, like taking humans out of the loop. With machines, after things go wrong, we often notice overlooked signals that could have indicated vulnerabilities. With social relations, it's similar, and improving social consciousness, that is, seeing and appreciating the significance of such signals, should be the bread and butter of how we relate. This would empower us to recognize potential problems and act directly on them, you know, to spot them and fix them as they crop up, in a collective yet decentralized manner, even if this means deep social transformation, that is, in the metaphor, the system is made more adaptive. Doing so requires education, in the metaphor, training, sharing and rotating responsibilities, in the metaphor, experience, and common access against the artificial scarcity of private property, in the metaphor, ample resources, to combat relevant inequalities, in a metaphor, the pressures applied on individuals that influence their decisions, so that people retain the capacity to keep on fixing and therefore improving their relations. Moreover, this metaphor also fits anarchism well, in the sense that ongoing negotiation and adjustment is emphasized over social blueprints. And by this I don't mean to contrast repair with creation, but to think of repairing as creative activity. Of course, it involves forecast and planning for robustness, also known in engineering as designing for tolerance. It encompasses, speaking of societies rather than machines, accounting for path dependence and keeping in mind the coherence between means and ends. Still, obsessing over the initial moment of creation misses the point that, by fixing something, someone might in the future, as Pelton discusses the fixing of broken objects, think of how fun it was to see the insides of the thing, how they've learned the right way to do something, and how a friend helped them out. These are all things that can't be designed into a system. People have to decide how to restore its functionality, and that decision may change or subvert the values of the designer. Metaphorically, then, this is all about institutions that are constantly reassessed by confident, socially conscious individuals. Of course, sovereignty supporting political traditions. I'm talking here about Marxists, liberals, social democrats, etc. Of course, they also want to avoid disasters. But you have to think about it. For them, a disaster is when predetermined ideal outcomes are threatened, not necessarily causation of harm. After all, they are in favour of there being national armies and police and prisons and whatnot, which are meant to cause harm and threaten those who would threaten their ideal constitutions. Indeed, the point of all conformist social engineering is to induce people to not mind being harmed. As Cathy E. Ferguson writes, bureaucracies seek to tie up or loose ends and reduce us to a reflection of an organisation. In this sense, society under patriarchy, white supremacy, statism, capitalism, and other forms of intersecting domination really begins to resemble an airplane or a nuclear reactor, in the sense of a machine tied to specific purpose, regardless of what kind of machine people might require in their lives now or in the future. In yet other words, the designer's values cannot be subverted. Even further, each individual becomes like an expendable, replaceable part, evaluated according to their performance. They are increasingly rendered machine-like. To respect state representatives, ponders Peter Gelderloos, is to mistake them for reasonable human beings rather than the organic masks that an insatiable machine wears in order to extend its power. Of course, every social system is self-reinforcing, and that is actually good. Anarchists also want anarchy to be sustainable. But the kinds of social systems anarchists envision are qualitatively different. They include in their own enacting a way to undo themselves, as Francisco Varela puts it. Anarchism, Klebanelli analyzes, is a dynamic politic that invites its very destruction while maintaining composure of core principles. It tries to create a healthy culture, as Sean Day Woods defines it, one that doesn't keep anything that can't be destroyed. Instead of humans becoming more like machines, the institutions that anarchists are intent on promoting are supposed to be more organic, balanced, open-ended, diverse. Creation is always anarchist, wrote Diego de Santillan, and so are creators if they do not create in view of automating themselves. As Ruth Keener discusses regarding Kropotkin's vision, his defense of organizational proposals being always open to revision and dissent ultimately meant that society should be a living, evolving organism. Even more, in the end, there is no one single society, no single social machine, so to speak. Like the Zapatistas, who walk toward a world in which many worlds fit, anarchists also conclude that the challenge, really, is to integrate multiple utopias, to render diverse social machines interoperable without disasters. In the end, the problem is not exactly machines themselves. Analyzing romantic tropes, which were somewhat influential among anarchists, John Trash notes that machines drew forth virtual powers and brought about conversions among hidden forces. They could be used to create new laws and organic orders, remaking humans' relationship to nature and renewing nature itself. Anarchists seem to draw a line between creating and using machines on one hand, and, metaphorically or not, being one, being absorbed into one, on the other. If Hobbes himself described the Leviathan as a huge machine, anarchists often tacked this mechanical political reasoning, exploring what more organic relations would look like. Of course, to heed Riclise's warning, this metaphor is far from straightforward. If social machines are made of ourselves and our relational patterns, there may be a difference in how organic or mechanic they are, but the boundaries between creating, using, and being them are definitely blurred, to say the least. Even if the metaphor is not perfect, however, I still think it deserves attention given recent technological developments. For Shoshana Zuboff, present-day global technology conglomerates commodify our behavior, shaping it at scale through automated machine processes that nudge, coax, tune, and herd us toward profitable outcomes. It is no longer enough to automate information flows about us, increasingly the goal is to automate us. The enormous amount of data produced about us enables automated decision-making, private and public, leading to what Alvaro Diaz calls dystopian iteration, when the future, conceived as a straight line, without surprises or chances of being transformed, is reified by algorithmic decisions, crystallizing imbalances and externalities. In other words, if anarchists criticize the building of agency-crushing sovereign machines out of our own actions and dispositions, this is becoming less metaphorical as time passes. The automated, racist control of predictive policing, credit scores and algorithmic bosses, advances in the emulation of human likeness and knowledge, the grim suffocation of war by drone surveillance and AI-targeted strikes, the invasiveness of pregnancy-guessing gadgets, all of this seems to strengthen the anarchist case for a rethinking of what freedom means. At least, that is, if this notion is at all to continue a guiding aspiration for the future.
Thank you for listening. To help others find Anarchist Essays, please rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts. And if you're interested in anarchist ideas, why not check out the journal Anarchist Studies? For over 20 years, Anarchist Studies has been publishing original research on the history, theory, and practice of anarchism. For more information, visit www.lwbooks.co.uk/anarchist-studies.